Hey now, welcome to the Dirty Side of the Track, America's leading Formula One podcast. I'm Brian, that's Rob, but today we have a special guest with us. Mr. Vail, you want to do introductions?
I will indeed. And when you said, and that's Rob, I didn't know who you were referring to because today there are two of us here. That's right. Previous guest and friend of the show, Rob Reed, is back as the third occupant of our bar stool.
Woo,
so, hey, Rob.
Hey now.
Yeah, good to be here.
Oh, hey, threw a hey now in there, Brian.
I like
That's it. I'm getting rid of you now. We can have the two Robs.
That's fine, as long as there's a succession plan in place.
So, we were just catching up before we started recording, Rob, and I think it's only right that before we crack on with the rest of the episode that you just bring us up to date on what you were doing last weekend while some of us were at bars watching the event. You may have been a little closer to the action.
Yeah, of course. I was in Miami for the Grand Prix for the second annual, and it looks like they extended it for another, I don't know, 5 or 6 years. So we're going to be in Miami for a while, which makes sense because it's a really great venue. I mean, being in Miami in South Florida in early May is a great place to be. So the destination is just perfect. You know, you could really kind of work in a beach vacation leading into the Grand Prix. So that worked out great. And had some pretty cool experiences with Valtteri and the race itself and some of the teams.
Yeah, I mean, I wasn't feeling sick at all with jealousy as you were reeling off some of the things. So why don't you just take us through some of the little activities you got up to down in Miami? Because I'm sure some of the listeners will be loving to join me feeling sick as a parrot with jealousy. I mean, loving the fact that you enjoyed yourself so much.
All right. So the first cool thing was actually on Wednesday. As you guys know, Valtteri is a partner in this bike event in his home country of Finland called Finland Gravel. And so like when he's in the U.S., he does these kind of promotional things for the race. And for Miami, you know, they did the kind of standard bike ride in the morning, which I actually missed. And then in the afternoon, they booked a go-karting place out at like the NASCAR track. It's called Miami like Homestead Raceway, right?
Yep.
And so it was just about a dozen of us, some journalists and some other people from the race and stuff like that went out to this little go-kart track, and you know, Valtteri shows up, and of course like the go-kart place hasn't been made aware that like he's coming, right? And the like attendants who like give you kind of like your you know, this is how you guys do it. These are the rules. You know,
oh, no.
This is like, they didn't know they were talking to Valtteri Bottas at all. It was so funny. And I'm looking over and Valtteri's so chill and so humble. Right. Like, and then we get to the point where you're like doing your head sock and your helmet. And like, I'm watching these attendants literally show Valtteri like how to put on a racing helmet.
No way.
And Valtteri's just like playing along. You're like, yeah, okay, is this how you do it? You know, you put your hands up and pull the helmet down on your head. I mean, it was just like kind of ridiculous. And they finally, you know, they finally told him like, you know, who he was, and they got it. So that was pretty funny. And then, so the go-karting was like, you know, basically two qualifying sessions, then a 25 lap race with about a dozen of us. And Tiffany was there too, Valtteri's girlfriend. And so we do the first quali session and come back into the pits basically. And we get to look at our times and everything like that. And I'm like running P5, right? Valtteri's P1, Tiffany's P2. And I talked to Valtteri and I'm just like, dude, I'm like, what's, you know, are you flat out in like turn one? And like, you know, he's like, yeah, I just like lift for a second. And then just I'm like, oh, okay, cool. So he's like giving me tips, giving everybody tips basically on how to go faster. So in Q2, I went P3. Tiffany actually clocked in faster than Valtteri on that session. And then I was like 2/10 behind Valtteri.
Whoa.
And then, yeah, right. I was like, woo-hoo. And then in the race, they switch up the cars. Right. They give you different car numbers. Right. So for whatever reason, I ended up like basically in the equivalent of a Williams for the race. Like this thing.
Whoa,
was...
I'm sensing some foreshadowing of excuses come in here, Rob.
Oh, totally.
On, please continue.
Yeah. So like, you know, and we do a standing start, which I don't know if they usually do that, but we did a standing start for like content and stuff like that. And like people are just like blowing by me like left and right. Like I'm just like, you know, trying to inch this thing forward. Like, come on. And like, I mean, you just like it wouldn't even go fast enough to have to brake. And even though there wasn't really that many braking points on this little kind of almost a circle, Yeah, people were just like blowing by me. And like, there's a clip on the, I put the video on YouTube, and there's a clip where Valtteri passes me up the inside into the final corner, like just flying. Like, and you know, you hear him like tap his brakes and he hits the apex. Then we hit like the main straight and he's just gone. Like, he just carries so much momentum through the apex. I mean, it was just amazing. And
but he didn't beat Valtteri then.
No, so Valtteri won the race. You know, Tiffany in second. I ended up in P5 despite, you know, basically driving the equivalent of a Williams. Nice so job. I wasn't completely disappointed. But the funny thing was that, like, you know, they did a little like medal ceremony, right? And of course Valtteri gets like his medal. And I'm like, hey man, I'm like, it's been a while, huh?
There's the bitterness of a Williams driver.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. So he's like, you know, he was like, yeah, he's like, felt good. And then fast forward to freaking like FP3, right? And like, I'm like in the Alpha, you know, hospitality suite, like looking up at the screen, and like Valtteri goes like P7 in FP3, like with like Joe nowhere to be seen, not even close. Right. And I'm like, wow, this. And then he gets into qualifying, he gets into Q3 in P7. Right. And I'm talking to the guys at Alpha and they're like, you know, like we actually have a shot at P4, you know, in quali if we, you know, keep this up. And of course, you know, we know what happened in qualifying. He just didn't get to make his lap. So he starts P10. But I was definitely left thinking like, maybe there was something about the go-karting, you know, that like boosted his confidence, right? I mean, a win is a win, right?
I think you're selling yourself short. Maybe there's something about your interaction with him during the go-karting that did it as well, Rob.
I think
we're going to assign credits to the go-karting, I would give yourself some too.
No, I told Pitlane Paul they might want to put me on the payroll, right? Yeah. I mean,
I'm the
X factor. Yeah. I'm the X factor in Valtteri's Miami form.
You're that extra 1% of confidence that he needs in his brain to get the most out of a car.
Totally. I mean, yeah, Joe wasn't anywhere close.
Yeah,
he was on fire.
It is definitely all you, Rob. But yep. I saw some of the pictures. It was really cool to see you and Paul hanging out. I'm hopeful that one day. Well, first off, I'm hopeful that me, Brian, and Paul get to hang out in Canada just for a beer, just to get the three of us in the same place at the same time. But one day, all four of us will hang out in the same place at the same time, and who knows, maybe that will be what crashes the universe to an end, that we can't all be in the same place at the same time. But it's great to have you back, and it sounds like an absolute amazing time in Miami. But that was last week. We now have to move on to this week, which is going to be the normal roundup of news and social, a quick jaunt into Brian's video vault, and then we just thought we'd take on the small little negligible topic of the dirty side is going to fix F1. So, yeah, you're welcome, everyone. We're going to fix that up. And then we are going to take a look ahead at Italy, because we're going to Imola next week. Well, we're not going. You're not going, are you, Rob?
No.
Okay, so none of us are going, but we will virtually be going to Imola for next week's race. And somewhere in the middle of that, Brian's going to probably try to gloat about F1 fantasy, but we'll see where he scores.
No gloating, just recap for all the people who do. I didn't do well last week, but I want to give
then
the
we'll
top
definitely
10
talk
a shout
about it then.
Out. Yeah, of course. We can't forget that.
Oh, right. Okay, so let's jump into news and social. Kind of been quite a few little bits coming out this week. Now, the one that really went mental, and I think, Brian, I really need to hand over to you to introduce this one, is the Danny Rick DeVries story. So do you want to fire it up?
I'm ready. Here we go. So this week, reporting live over the rumor mill, there were stories that Nick DeVries was told he will be out if he can't turn it around shortly, and he would be replaced by Danny Rick, and the internet caught fire. Twitter went nuts. The world went nuts. Everyone said, oh, he's having a seat fitting. He's getting ready to replace Nick DeVries. And then Nate Saunders, thank you, Nate, friend of the show, came out with the clarity we all needed. Quote, Daniel Ricciardo is not being lined up to replace Nick DeVries at AlphaTauri currently. Sources have told me he also did not go to Faenza for a seat fitting this week. He's in Europe for Scotty James and Chloe Strolls. End quote. The rumor mill can kind of spin itself into a frenzy at times, yes?
Oh, it can. And then the stupid thing was, even without Nate's clarification, right, even if he had been a seat fitting in AlphaTauri, there would have been absolutely nothing out of the ordinary with that, because apparently as part of his reserve driver contract, he will be a reserve driver for, named as both the Red Bull reserve and AlphaTauri. So in the event they need to call on him, he has to have a seat that fits. So, yeah, I don't know. I know a lot of people want to see Danny Rick back on the grid because they just like him as a dude, I think. But I think there probably is a bit of pressure anyway on De Vries because he's been rubbish.
Well, he has. He's had a lot of incidents with the walls and corners and people, and he's really struggled. But I'd ask you guys a question, both of you here. Is the AlphaTauri a bad car that Yuki's maybe overperforming a little bit, and Nick is a rookie, so he's kind of still learning? Or is Yuki showing what the AlphaTauri can do, and Nick is that bad so far? Which, you know, is it good on Yuki or bad on Nick so far? And it doesn't have to be all of one, of course, but I'm just curious your thoughts.
Hand over to Mr. Reed first on that one.
No, I'd have to say, you know, Yuki is finding his footing. He's been in the car for several years. You know, he's been part of the development, clearly, of the car. So that's where I would have to land. I mean, De Vries had a, you know, an amazing one day in Monza, you know, in a Williams.
You did.
And, you know, but, you know, AlphaTauri is a different car and the stakes are different. So he's probably feeling the pressure. So I think he's, you know, he's struggling like rookies tend to struggle.
Yeah, that's where I was going to go, is that as much as I'm a little bit disappointed because I thought he was going to be easily the best of the three rookies, just because he's an old, even though he's a rookie to F1, he's, you know, an older head on those shoulders, right? So he's not a rookie in age term. So I'm a bit disappointed with him so far, but you've got to give him more than a handful of races to kind of bed into it. I don't think the AlphaTauri is a great car, so I think it's probably a little bit of both. I think Yuki's probably extracting a little bit extra because he's familiar with the car. I don't think the car's that great to start with, and then De Vries is just kind of struggling to get his arms around it, so he's kind of showing the flip side of the coin to what Yuki's doing. But
well, I'd agree with you guys.
Talking about blaming cars,
I just don't like that. I just don't like Red Bull's approach with the musical chairs. You know,
yeah.
It's just like you gotta commit to a certain amount of time with drivers. This just like, I mean, this is the worst thing for De Vries if he's struggling, you know, with his confidence, and then you like put out into the press and the rumor mill that he's going to be replaced. Like, that's like the worst possible thing for his confidence, right?
100%.
Yeah, agree. Yeah, and like I say, talking of blaming cars for things, some of this must be true because Charles Leclerc has not become a bad driver overnight, but he kind of came out and said, it's incredibly difficult to be on the limit in this car. What's the quote here? It's from one corner to the other, and even within one corner, sometimes you can have huge understeer, which then snaps into huge oversteer, and it's not ideal to give him confidence in the car when he has no idea what it's going to do when he throws it into a corner, which kind of we all saw in Miami and quite a lot this season, where he just doesn't look to be on it. But bizarrely, what I don't understand from that is that he has got full confidence, it seems, if it's qualifying. So he can drive on the edge for one lap and go and put it on pole, but then he can't drive on the edge when it's race day. That does seem a little bit hypocritical.
He did stuff it at the end of quali last time,
yeah,
trying to keep it on that edge. So, I mean, he may have gone over. And interestingly, on same topic, Ralf Schumacher came out and said Leclerc and Sainz are the main problem of Ferrari. And I did not agree with that.
That's ridiculous.
Isn't it? Is it? That just felt very ridiculous. Maybe that was an AI-generated quote like they're trying to do with that other ridiculous story about Michael. So I don't get it. Like, it feels to me as though Ferrari's problems aren't the drivers, personally. But they just got to get the car developed in the right way. They did not take a step forward this offseason, as people thought they would have.
They've kind of gone backwards.
Well, Mercedes, McLaren, and Ferrari all went backwards, right?
Yeah.
While Aston Martin went a huge leap ahead, and Ferrari and Red Bull also went a big step ahead. So that's kind of what's happened to the field.
I'm excited about the Alpines. I want to see if they can keep moving forward well. They seem to have held position. They had a little struggle getting it straightened out in the beginning of the season, but they still look fast like they did at the end of last year.
And Haas is like, you know, showing like, you know, kind of spots of performance and brilliance here and there, right?
Right.
They are actually. I mean, they were really kind of showing Ferrari up, really, showing that maybe the engine actually isn't too bad. It just needs to be in the right car because Haas actually did much better than Ferrari last time out. So it's got to be something in, like Charles is saying, something in the setup of that car that is making it sensitive to wind, sensitive to being unpredictable in the understeer, oversteer. Just jumping around the notes a little bit, just while we're on kind of like car setups, and you mentioned McLaren went backwards. They were kind of saying that they've spent a lot of time looking at, according to Andrea Stella, where they're losing time, because like we've said on previous episodes, certain times you've seen that McLaren look like an absolute rocket ship, and like Lando was putting in some like really fast laps, but they're just not stringing it together. what they say they've managed to sort of pinpoint this down to is when there's low grip, whether it be mechanical grip or the track surface or what have you, when they go into areas where they need to be both off throttle and off brake. So, you know, Rob knows all about this now, following Valtteri around a go-kart track. But they lose all pace. So they were saying in Baku, where it's fast, where you've got either heavy braking, heavy acceleration, they've been absolutely fantastic and they've been competitive. But specifically at the castle section in Baku, where you essentially lift and glide through the castle area, they were hemorrhaging time to everybody else. And this time around in Miami, when the whole thing was resurfaced and there's generally a lack of grip, they just can't nail that section. And it got me thinking, and I know this is a stupid thing to say, but F1 is so technical and so tenths of seconds that we matter about here, that they're basically saying their car is just as competitive as everybody else's. Apart from this little window where you happen to be off throttle, off brake, they are losing tenths of seconds. And you're like, crap, when we sit here and talk about bad cars, these things are all still ridiculously fast. But what we're really comparing to each other is like Max being, whatever it was, 0.4 quicker than Checo in Sector 1 last week in Miami. The rest of the lap, they're all actually identical. These bad drivers, bad cars, they're not really like miles back behind everybody else. We're talking like you were saying, Robin, like carrying the speed through an apex, right? Doing that consistently and doing the right line over and over again is what really separates the men from the boys in this sport. It's it really is small margins when you think about it. There you go. There's my little technical insight.
Are you trying to audition for the Tech Eds podcast?
No, because I don't think I really said anything that I understood what I said, so no one could ask me a question on it. But I just find it interesting when, you know, we'll sit here as armchair fans and like beat up, oh, that McLaren's a bag of bolts and the Williams is crap and the AlphaTauri isn't as quick as it should be. And these guys obviously are paid the big money to analyze every single corner and every little bit of telemetry to kind of go, that's the problem. What I find interesting is how do they then fix it? Because it's one thing identifying the problem. The second thing is what they can bring to the next races, right, in terms of upgrades and trying to work around these little issues that they find on the car.
Totally.
So, yeah.
I love those overlays, those quali overlays with like the two cars where you see, you know, exactly what they were doing and where one, you know, made a little progress on the other. And then you see how like actually like precise and close, even the cars that like, you know, aren't competitive with one another, they're still pretty close. Right.
You see the overlay. Was it Baku where Charles and Max got an identical lap?
Identical. I know.
And they showed the overlay.
Amazing.
I know. And the overlay was insane because, and this is a stupid thing to say in hindsight, because obviously it wouldn't be true. But you think, well, because they crossed the line in identical times, that must have mean they were pretty much identical the way around the lap. And they're really not. It's really ebbing and flowing where the Ferrari is strong versus where Max is tighter through corners or gets the throttle down quicker. And watching those two cars go back and forward, but you already knew the end story. You know, you already knew the Titanic was going to sink. It was just insane how they ended up going across the line at exactly the same time. But yeah, I love those.
A thousandth of a second. Yeah.
Insane. So, oh, margins. Brian, I'm going to let you talk about tires because I have a little sleep.
So Pirelli are going to bring more durable tires to Silverstone. The cars are quicker than they expected, which is a first challenge. Why wouldn't you anticipate evolution as the regs settle in? And they feel a new reinforced tire to deal with the load pressure is needed. And I, in our session coming up where we fix F1, we're going to make the argument that we should go to softer compounds of tires. I'm not saying in terms of reinforcement of the tire itself, but I'd like to see more degradation on the tires, forcing strategy, forcing pits. I'm getting tired of people running the whole race and doing the last lap pit stop because it's mandatory. So I get their point on reinforcement. None of us want to see blowouts if that's what the conversation is about. But if it's just about making them last longer because of the load and the speed, it's lasting too long already. We already added a compound at the C1 level. We moved C1 to C0. We added a C1. We got more hard compounds than we've ever had in our lives. Take it easy, Pirelli. No?
I mean, there were blowouts, you know. But didn't Lewis like finish the race on a blowout a couple of years ago?
Silverstone, yeah, Silverstone. Delaminated. I don't know what that means, but that's whatever.
And there
it
was
did.
There was a couple others, so I have to assume that plays into a little bit of this because there's so much load on the tires in Silverstone.
One at Baku, remember 2 years ago? Was it 2 years ago? Lance and Max had blowouts in the rear tires as well on that straight. Yeah. One at the front, one at the back. So yeah, I get it. I would love to not see that happen, but I'd love to see the tires degrade a little faster and force either, you know, a little tire management or tire strategy is what I actually want to see, as opposed to now where you send someone out on hards and pray for a safety car.
Yeah. Yeah, well, we'll get that when we fix the sport for everybody. We'll get there. Now, do you want to talk pizza, Brian, or do you want to open up the video vault?
Let's do the video vault. So, this week...
Now we're going to have to explain what the pizza was, because I was just looking at the notes where you threw in...
Valtteri's launching a gluten-free pizzeria on wheels concept in Finland this summer. The idea got out a little hand, and here we go. Behold, and I can't pronounce this, so if anyone can help me here... I don't know. It's a gluten-free pizza that has flavor and soul. And so Double G was born, and the goal is making crispy, fresh stone oven pizza on wheels for everyone to enjoy in Finland. I think that sounds brilliant. I think it's, I mean, not to, you know, not just because he's a friend of the pod, Valtteri is, but so I think it sounds fantastic. I know a lot of folks, friends, family members, and people who have gluten intolerance. And so being able to get real food that may be gluten-free, that tastes fantastic, has been a struggle. It's getting better, but this sounds amazing.
He doubles it up with his gin at the same time. Gin and pizza, let's go.
Gin, coffee, you know, bike racing. Like he's got his hands in a whole bunch of different kind of, you know, new ventures these days. So I just thought maybe we should come up with some more pitches for Valtteri. Like we can pitch him some new business ideas on the pod on a later pod. Let's do that.
I think we did already. You are the crash test dummy karting warm up.
So, yeah, you just beat on me in the karting.
Exactly, and then come in all pumped, ready to go. By the way, I don't drink coffee or ride bikes. So if you could just sign me up for the gin and the pizza, I'll be happy.
You don't ride a bike?
Well, I do, but only to get places when I've had too much to drink.
Exactly. You ride with a gin in one hand and a slice of pizza in the other. Come on, let's go. If he wants another venture, he can also... I mean, I'm quite happy to completely sell out and become the Valtteri Bottas sponsored podcast. I'll change the name and everything.
Well, we already got this part.
This is Valtteri Bottas, and you're listening to the Dirty Side of the Track.
Sign us up, Valtteri. We're ready. All right. So quick run through of the video vault this week. It's not as humongous as the last couple weeks, but there were a couple things that carried over that came out Sunday of last week. One U.S. Pictionary challenge on the Haas channel. 4 minutes. It's definitely worth it because you have K-Mag and Hulk, and they're joined by Pietro and Gunther, and it's a mess. Like, it's just acknowledged these people are not great at art or understanding U.S. landmarks. So the combo of the two made it fun. I'd give it a thumbs up. And then on the Ray-Ban Films channel, Ray-Ban and Scuderia Ferrari, new collection, nearly four minutes. It's Charlos Le Sainz, and if you love them, then go watch. If you don't, it's a hard pass. They basically try to talk back and forth through the alphabet. A, and then the next person starts something with B, and so on. And then they run out of steam and end it, and then go finish it for us in the comments. I'm like, bro, come on. I'm like, you could at least finished. It was
finish it for us in the comments.
It does. It, like, they get to T or S, like, finish it in the comments. It was not good. It's 4 minutes. You can pass, unless, of course, like me, you have one of those, if not both of those drivers. And then the last one I'll highlight before I get to some F1 ones, Formula One Channel ones, is we all saw the new F1 23 gameplay released in terms of some of the trailers and some of the pieces. Arava, who I've followed for a long time since, actually not that long, since COVID, so 3-4 years. Great streamer, great content, kind of took it apart in a 15-minute video. I got through 5 minutes. I'm like, great, I get it. I moved on. It was worth it, though. If anyone's interested in the F1 23 game, Arava's channel is great. Check it out. It does look like it'll be a fun game to play, and I look forward to hopefully using 23 to play against Vail.
We still got 22. We'll have a mid-season break coming up. We'll get it nailed this time.
Yeah, but 23 will be out by then. We can move to that version.
Are you going to buy me a copy, are you?
Yeah. Yeah, with your money.
Okay, well, if you're going to buy me a copy, we'll do it on 23. If you're not, we've both got 22, so let's just do what we've got.
Yeah. And then the last couple, as I said, were Formula One Channel. These were all very good. Upside down penalties with Yuki Tsunoda and Nyck de Vries goggle games. So if anyone remembers, the Ferrari crew did the goggle games where it flips your vision from top to bottom. And so everything is upside down and right is left and black is white. No, it's just upside down. 7 minutes, check it out. It was fun. 13 times an underdog, almost won an F1 race, F1 channel 9 minutes. It's long, but I always love these. If you're kind of like newer to the sport and want to learn about some of the past stuff, this is great. If you've been a fan forever and want to revisit some of those memories, this is great. And the last one, and I have to ask you guys a question about it. F1 drivers take on the 5-second challenge. They're asked questions they have to answer in 5 seconds. It's part two, because we've done part one prior, 4 minutes. Here is the question. I'm a little confused by this. Nico Hülkenberg, they asked for things you put on a pizza, and he said tuna. I would ask both you guys, have you ever had pizza with tuna on it?
Question? No, I'm going to rank that right up there with the pineapple. Like, just...
Well, no. And there were many pineapples, but that's understandable in a Hawaiian pizza. I've never even heard of pizza with tuna.
Is this like canned tuna, or is it like sushi grade tuna? It's like
tuna rolls. Like, are we
either,
talking?
Either way, no. But like, a little more clarity.
Either way, it's wrong.
When he said tuna, I'm like, what? I had to replay it. Like, I thought I'd been drinking too much already. I'm like, he actually said tuna. So anyway, enough about
tuna
the videos.
Pineapple, did he?
Huh? No, honestly, every other driver mentioned pineapple. Like every other one, half of them mentioned pineapple. Yeah. And they even said, I know it's controversial. They didn't say it was what their ingredient was. It's just an ingredient. But tuna?
Oh, man. Oh, man, oh, man, oh, man, oh, man. Right. So.
One more video. One of the things that... One more video. Oh, so there is a go-kart. There is a go-karting, my go-karting video.
Oh, sorry. Yes.
Is actually in the Forbes article that I wrote on the Miami Grand Prix. So Rob Reed, Forbes... You can find that. You can see Valtteri pass me up the inside on the third clip.
We are putting the video in the show notes. So where you find all the links to the videos as normal, it will be included for you to check.
It will be an honorary member of Brian's Video Vault this week. We'll make sure it's
Thank
on
you.
There. It was a video I kind of saw this week, which set me off down a little bit of a rabbit hole that sent me off on another Rob's rant is incoming. I know it really is becoming a thing now that I just get a little bit angry every week. But James Coker, who we had on the show, we had great fun with. He stitched in to one of his Instagram reels, an Instagram reel from a guy from South Africa, I think it was, just basically going on a tirade saying, America, hands off F1. You'll ruin it for everybody. Just leave it alone. Let it go back to how it was. And I was thinking, there's this anti-American sentiment to if they ever dare put any glitz and glamour, then it's all wrong. It's all rubbish and should be forgotten forever. And it kind of got me going off down a little bit of a rabbit hole. Now, first off, I'll admit, I didn't like the intros. I've got no problem with an Americanized set of intros, just not that intro like it was a WWE walkout. That even the drivers just looked embarrassed. But they could definitely find a way of doing it that was cool, just not that one again.
I liked it.
I know. But the thing is that
I didn't mind it either way, but like the drivers didn't like it, and the timing of it before when they would have otherwise been talking to their race engineers, you know, before the race, that it took away from that. That's what I didn't like.
Yeah.
Right. So
no, I agree. And so it got me like looking into this and thinking like, well, are we, what is the problem with the new fans or you know, the Drive to Survive generation, all this kind of stuff. And I was kind of looking at some stats here and thinking, well, really, let's think about this. Every sport in the world needs eyes on it. It needs viewers. It needs to make money. There's almost no sport in the world that is a charity, which you know, relies on the goodwill of everybody to just carry on like paying the drivers in. What Brian?
If you're going to do stats, can we do a Rob Stats edition with the Slap House?
Any excuse for the Slap House if you want to throw it in.
Rob Stats Edition, F1 viewership and information. Here he comes.
Oh my gosh. At least you could have. I mean, it should have been SAP Stats, Rob Edition. It's still SAP Stats, right? Yeah, you've ruined it all. That's it. I'm done. Anyway, so F1's viewing figures, like, it's not like it was all absolutely unicorns and rainbows until they started putting races in the States. Viewing figures have been steadily declining all the way from the early 2000s all the way down to 2017, when, yes, Liberty bought the rights. But they don't come in and change the rules. They just come in and understand how to put a show on. So they're a media company. They know how to get eyeballs on the sport. So we went from 352 million unique Formula One viewers in 2017, and 1 year later, it's 490 million. Now, 490, it hadn't been that high since the early 2010s, you know, 2011, something like that. So they did a fantastic job of getting eyes on the sport. Now, the thing is, whenever you bring new eyes in, oh, sorry, before I go to the viewers, they also massively expanded the social media footprint. They had some stats here, and we'll put them up later, about how I think it's like a 30... Can't even see. I got bad eyes now. I can't even see the stats on my own little image here. I see I'm screwing this up already. But anyway, the F1 increase in social media dwarfed everything else. Like, it dwarfed Champions League, Premier League, PGA Golf, NBA, MLB, NFL, NHL. They absolutely rocked it in terms of increasing social media engagement. So here we are. They've got a whole bunch of new people coming through social media, a whole bunch of new people watching it on TV. So yeah, they decided everyone needs to put a show around it, right? They've got to have, let America do what America want to do. Let Monaco have all the glamour and glitz and yachts and millionaires. And every venue has been, I won't say guilty, because it's what they've got to do to try to keep the audience going. They have to get the eyeballs in. So I think this showmanship that has been wrapped around the event, unfortunately, is needed to bring those new eyeballs into the sports. What do you two think?
I mean, Miami was like an absolute party. Like, it went off like the entire time, like all over the venue in Miami. You know, there was just like the top DJs and some of the top DJs in the world were there. So many celebrities. It's like the race was kind of happening within the party. Almost, right? Like, there was like a huge party and an F1 race was happening during it, almost. Like, it was kind of like the feeling that I got. But that's just like, that's just the way Miami and South Florida is. Like, that's gonna be you're gonna have a unique experience if you're gonna go to the Miami Grand Prix compared to like going to Baku or going to Abu Dhabi. Like, they're all gonna be completely different.
I think that there's two parts to it in my mind, Rob, what you described. One is the show that wraps around the race. And then there's the race and the components that make up the race, the content of what it is. And I'm a little bit of an old fart when it comes to some of those things. Like, I enjoy them. I don't want the sprints the way they were this year.
I will get there. Don't jump ahead to fixing F1.
So those, to me, are the two big differences, what wraps around it and what goes into it. And to me, I'm fine with the stuff that wraps around it being crazy.
Yeah. Well, it's this kind of sport entertainment, you know, kind of balanced, right? And like, the people who are like, you know, I don't like the new F1. They're basically saying, I don't like the entertainment aspect of F1 that is being, you know, built up. I just want the pure sport, you know, just give me the stats, give me the race, you know, cut and dry. Like, that's all I want to see. That's the way F1, that's the way I feel F1 is. But these new fans, these younger fans, want the party and the entertainment and the drama and the drive to survive aspect with the sport. And I'm with them, actually. Like, I like the evolution.
So, here at the Dirty Side, with Rob Reed alongside us, we are going to take a look at fixing F1. So forget the show and the wraparound. If the show and the wraparound wasn't there and there was no entertainment on offer other than what goes on the track, we can all probably agree that it's not perfect right now. The new regs have come in, things are trying to settle, but we've taken issue with some of the things that we've seen this season alone. So we're going to take a little meander through some various aspects of what we've seen this year, whether it be looking at the calendar, the tracks, how kind of the race weekend format works in terms of qualification, sprint format, the race itself. Unfortunately, we're going to humor Brian and talk about tires a little bit as well. But we're just going to really look at everything that we think here at the Dirty Side needs fixing in F1. So, Brian, this was your idea. So to throw you firmly under the bus, do you want to kick us off with kind of your thoughts on how we can fix the calendar?
Yeah, so let's start with something sort of benign, the calendar itself. It is crazy today, the way we zigzag across the world, weekend to the next. I know we want more races. Most fans do. A lot of people in don't. But so to me, let's just cut the calendar into quarters. Two quarters before the summer break, two quarters after. Six races a quarter, six times four for everyone who's math challenged, 24 races a year, no more. And some of them may have five, but then make them into segments. Middle East and Asia, Australia to start Q1. Go to Europe Q2 as it warms up. Summer break, Q3 Europe, and then the Americas and end it in Brazil. And yes, you can put a little bit of change in there. It doesn't have to work that way where it's just solely segmented like that. But to me, lower the environmental aspect of doing this, lower the drain on the teams who have to do this so they don't have to travel as much and as far. I would like to see the calendar aligned a little bit by geography. And so to me, that's the first part I would say is, how can we make the calendar flow a little better from a geographic perspective? And then my last piece on this is, come up with a core and rotation type approach for tracks. Find the core tracks who are always going to be part of this, the Spas. Find the Brazils. Find the, you know, you can make an argument, Singapore. I love Japan. You got to have Suzuka. I mean, like, some of these ones you have to have on. But then some of them have been not as conducive with racing with modern cars, the Mexicos. The conversation we've had about some of the other tracks, like what we did with Paul Ricard came off. I would say there are tracks like South Africa and Malaysia and Mugello who we could add back. And I'd love to see them in the rotation. So A, go to quarters, try to tie it to geography. And then B, I'd like to see some tracks put on forever, and then some know that there'll be a rotation through those regions. So that'd be my perspective on calendars and tracks. Mr. Reed, any thoughts from?
I mean, those are all great ideas. Yeah, I can't even, I would definitely not disagree with any of that, actually. It all makes complete sense. But, like, as you know, like, when it comes down to logistics and the different, you know, interests that are involved in creating the calendar, you know, I'm sure there's a lot of compromise that goes on behind the scenes.
And money. And money. Money that talks about yeah. where people are on the calendar. Abu Dhabi pays yeah. to be last.
It might just, yeah, it might just be not viable.
Yeah, that's the issue is that I don't think you'll ever get away from at the FIA accepting the big bucks, or, you know, Liberty or whoever it all then the money goes to for the being last, being first. That's always going to be a bit of a bidding war. But then I agree, the rest of it I think could follow it. I do like the idea of the track rotation, because I do miss some of the ones that kind of we don't go to anymore. This artificial kind of high bidding, locking in for like 10-year contracts. We haven't even been to Vegas yet, and Vegas might be an absolutely amazing race. But if it's garbage, they've got a contract for 10 years. Which seems insane that it's already been extended before we even raced there. So having like the ability to bring back, you know, Hockenheim, kind of various different yes. tracks around Europe that we could cycle in, cycle out. Again, I don't know if the money allows that to happen. Do some of these circuits rely on the F1 cash to be able to survive from year to year and couldn't afford a year out? I mean, they pay a premium, but they also get obviously the tourism and everything else into the area. So
yeah, but at the same time, you know, there's a lot of memes that go around, we race for money. I mean, there's enough now. The valuation of F1 is high enough where they could make sure this worked and that tracks didn't go under if they rotation. It could go both ways in terms of helping the tracks be there in the rotation.
Don't want to burn all our time talking about logistics and calendars. That's pretty dull. So let's get into fixing. Well, I was going to say fixing qualification, but let's actually throw at the same time. Let's hit two things together because I think they're intrinsically linked. Let's talk about the qualifying format, but also the qualifying format within the sprint weekend as well. Let's kind of try to hit the two things together if we can. First off, Brian, qualification. In a sprint weekend, do you like it being on a Friday?
Well, first of all, if we're stepping back for a second, sprint weekends go goodbye. So
no.
Yeah, yeah.
No.
I would turn sprint weekends into only for reserve drivers.
And well, I would make... not... Whoa. So you're agreeing... Hang on then.
Hang on. Okay,
let's hit sprints first and let's get back into qualifying after. So sprint formats. We said on the pod recently, actually myself and James Coker, we agreed, which is that I wanted to see sprint. I'm happy with a sprint format to give me extra racing. I don't like it counting towards the World Drivers' Championship, so I'd like to see a separate sprint championship set up. And really, I think we could probably, I don't know whether cost allows them to carry two reserve drivers, but if not, then it's a reserve driver only maybe event.
Yes.
So that the main drivers don't have to worry about damaging their car. It can be running the test car, the third car or what have you. But I like sprint races. I like the sprint. I like extra racing. I just don't like the way it counts towards the driver's championship at the moment.
See, if I had my way, I would get rid of it. But if we had to keep it for money, one a quarter, so four total in my quarter system, you could use reserve driver only. And it's no driver's championship points awarded, but you can get constructor's points. And so now it's a risk of using the car they're going to use on the weekend for the reserve driver to get some constructor's points. And I would lower the points. I don't like 8 points being awarded on this superfluous demonstration.
If it doesn't count,
I would go 3-2-1 back to what it was last year.
Oh, you're so wrong.
I'm so
What's
right.
the point
this
of doing it four times a year? Just do it every race, but don't have
Why?
The main driver. Just
what?
Reserve drivers only. Have a sprint
no.
championship.
No.
You're
no.
a free practice fan, aren't you?
No. I just think if you're going to do this, it shouldn't be with the main drivers for points. You're just
agree.
Inflating Red Bull's point
no,
total,
agree.
Max's point
so,
total, because they're too good.
So do it every race, but as a separate championship, and then it doesn't impact anything.
What is that championship for? Just giggles and other things? I mean, that doesn't make a lick of sense. Reserve drivers, no drivers championship, just constructor points. And then see who wants to go out. If you want to put Liam Lawson or Daniel Ricciardo on Max's car and risk crashing it the day before, see if they do it.
Well, I asked Valtteri his opinion on the new format. He likes the new format better than the old format. And I like that qualifying on Friday determines the grid on Sunday. Like I didn't like that the sprint determined the grid for Sunday. So I like
yeah,
a quali, right, to determine the grid. That should be consistent. Because then there was all this kind of thing about like, oh, did he get pole position or no? Like, was it an actual pole position? Because we're keeping pole position stats here, guys. Like they go back, you know, 50 years or whatever, 70 years, right? So we need to keep that intact. But I was like, you know what? But like, I'm like, I said, you know, but isn't it just like a lot of pressure? Like you got a quali on Friday, then you got another quali on Saturday, then you got a sprint race. And he's like, yeah, it is. But like, it's not every race. It's only like so many times a year. So it's okay. I'm good with it. So that was kind of Valtteri's take on it.
I guess, you know.
So I'd go, my final proposition then, and you can carry on disagreeing, Brian, it's fine, is that I'd be doing it every race. I'd be doing the, it doesn't count towards the, it's a separate sprint championship. Now I know that maybe doesn't, and I'm on, an, you know, I'm part of an American podcast, and obviously American sport doesn't understand this idea of having two championships in play at the same time, whereas like nope. every other sport around the world, you'll have, James Coker referenced the fact that he wanted it like the FA Cup or the League Cup, which obviously you glazed over at, Brian, because you didn't know what he was talking about.
Nope.
But it's two tournaments that happen in parallel to each other, two different champions at the end. So anyway, I would have sprint championship. You use the third car, you know, the test car, so you don't have to worry about this nonsense. It doesn't count towards constructors. You have two. You have a sprint champion constructor, sprint champion driver. It's down, it's reserve drivers only. That way they're ready to rock in the event they're needed. We get something to watch. The drivers don't have to worry about being involved in stuff they don't want to be involved in. And maybe just to go to Valtteri's suggestion, if it was every race, then maybe four of the races a year, they can decide to let one of the main drivers have at it as well, if they really want to get a little bit of sprint under their skin. But I don't see the point. For me, you're either all in or all out. I like
and
it,
I'm
I'd be
out.
All in. I don't get doing four of them. I don't see the point.
I would
for me, just in general, for me, like the biggest moment for me in Formula One is lights out. Like lights out is what I look forward to most in
yeah.
F1, right? And with the sprint weekend, you get two lights out moments. So like, I'm just like all for that. Like, I love that. I thrive on lights
out. Would you be for it if it were reserve drivers?
Sure,
well?
Yeah, yeah.
So that's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
If we kept it, yeah. I would make that's it fine. Only reserve drivers. I would only make it four times a year, personally. And then I would not have it count toward driver's championship at all, and no separate championship, just add it to constructor's points. Well, if you didn't like that idea, I don't think you're gonna like my quality idea much more there, Vale. So I have a couple suggestions, and I'm actually gonna carve this up in a traditional approach and then a more aggressive approach. So number one, my traditional approach, which I think may go over, let's keep the three section quality we have now, Q1, Q2, Q3, but let's shorten it, because I liked the shorter phase we saw in the sprint shootout just recently. So 18 minutes becomes 12 in Q1, 15 becomes 18 is 15, 15, 12, 12, 8. I would shorten the times of quali. And here is the point. Add back that whatever tire you use to get into Q3 has to be the tire you start the race on. There's no strategy involved in quali at this point, and it doesn't trickle over to the race, and it should. So that would be what I would do traditionally. My aggressive one, I think you might like this one, I'm not sure. I want to go back to an old one-lap quali shootout. They used it for a couple years, a handful of years ago. One-lap shootout, you get a warm-up lap, put in your lap, and then an in-lap. It's run in the reverse order of the championship, so Max would be going first. Other teams will have the time to beat. The track will get a little bit more rubbered in as the people at the back of the championship go. And again, the tire you use is the one... you have to start the race with. So now it's a gamble. Does Red Bull go out on a soft to get pole position? They don't know. It puts a lot of onus on strategy. So I'm done. Feel free to shoot your arrows at me now, Robs.
Well, I'll even let Mr. Reed go first on this one.
No, I mean, I support anything that is going to mix up the starting grid, you know? So like, you know, having Max go first and then, because that's what Valtteri was waiting for in quali, you know, and he got screwed by, you know, Leclerc's crash. Like he was waiting for the last second to go out with the track maximally rubbered in and cooling down. Like that's what was happening during quali in Miami. And he was going to get that one last chance to try to get it on a P4, right? And of course, you know, it got ruined. But yeah, so, but the only reason Miami was interesting was because Max was out of position in quali. And so he had to fight his way through. So anything to do to kind of like, you know, force a little mix up of the grid and force overtaking, absolutely for that.
Yeah, I mean, actually, I would, the only thing I would fix about the current, the time, amount of time, I don't really care how long they give for Q1 and Q2. I think you stick with the Q1, Q2, Q3. And I'd like to see Q3 go to single lap shootout for everybody. And again, in reverse order of the championship, reverse order of the previous race. I don't really care, but I agree that the fastest goes first. And then what I think would be great is everybody gets their moment in the sunshine in quali. Sometimes we don't see some qualifying laps. Sometimes people get stuck in traffic and have a great qualifying lap ruined because of some traffic. Whereas if you did, everybody goes out one at a time in that reverse order. Max goes out first. It's all eyes on him to see what he can do.
Just the 10 who make Q3.
Just Q3. Okay. So I do Q1 and Q2 like I always have. Whoever is the final 10, because you wouldn't trying to do like all 20 cards.
But if they only get one lap, that's the whole quality.
Yeah,
I like
that. One lap. Do
Q1, Q2, yep. And then Q3 is your single shot of your top 10.
And what about tires? You don't care? Let them use whatever they want.
I don't care what you do with tires.
So
it really
doesn't
interest me at all.
I'm flexible on the approach. I like the idea of the three, you know, sort of segments. I'm fine having just the third be the single lap. That would be exciting and some amazing TV and put the pressure on people to get it right once. But I'd like to have some strategy in quali.
Yeah.
And so to me, I would make a compound choice. Yeah.
And this is kind of like to my, you know, future point that I'm going to make. But yeah, anything that forces more strategy, more decision making, more data analysis, I'm absolutely for, because it's kind of like, again, like you've got driver skill, you got car performance, you got strategy. Those are the three things that determine, you know, who wins, right? And the driver skill and the performance of the car are pretty set. Strategy is really the big variable. So
the
anything
good news
we can
is
do.
Dirty Side of the Track with Brian and Rob, we don't even have to change anything. It's just a new host, Vails out, reads in. Rob Vail, how about you, man?
The way you're going with your crazy ideas, it's going to be Rob and Rob at the Dirty Side of the Track. I'm telling you, you're talking all manner of crazy nonsense. But
Vail,
anyway,
what would you change for the race? No, anything?
Well, before we get there, just to finish this one, is the reason I don't think I care about the tyres in quali is because we're going to come on to tyres in a minute. And I think if you got that aspect right and change the way tyres are going to be used in a race, I don't care how you can force strategy or you can make strategy come in a different way than some arbitrary, stupid rule in qualifying. I want to see everybody's hottest, fastest lap in qualifying. I don't want some rubbish lap done on a set of scrub mediums because of strategy. I want to see fastest, purest run to pole on qualifying. Now, I agree. I want to see strategy in the race. I'm sick and tired of what we've seen this year of one stops of hards for 70, 80% of the race, then a quick drop onto mediums and done. We're not seeing any pit stop strategies really this year. Miami was kind of okay, I guess, because half the grid split the strategy. So we kind of got to see hard to medium or medium to hard. Woo! But so I think tires, I just want to see. Don't want to see them fall off a cliff and like go to like four stop strategies because the tires are falling apart. But I would like to see, I've got no clue if this is even possible, but I'm pretty sure that years ago, the tires would start hitting that edge where all of a sudden people go, tires have gone, they've gone. And now it was a scramble to go, what am I going to do? And they're going to see if I can get through this phase of graining and come back in, or am I going to pit now? These seem to go off so slowly. People are on the radio all the time moaning about the tires going off, and then they'll go and put in a fastest lap two laps later. So I want to see the speed of tire degradation be ramped up so that they wear out quicker for each of the compounds. I don't want to make them dangerous and have blowouts or driver safety and that kind of stuff. Just want to see them go off quicker. I want to see the softs go. I want to see, well, actually more. I want to see the hards go first. They can't last. They can't last 99% of a race and do a one single shot pit stop right on your last lap. It's insane.
Yeah, I mean, I would agree. And we were talking a little bit about this before. I also don't want to see blowouts. I don't want to see Max coming down the straight at Baku and lose his rear left tire at 200 and some odd miles an hour. But I would like to see them go off a cliff. We went the wrong direction when Pirelli added the C0 or moved the C1 to the C0 and then put a C1.5 as this one. Extra hard compounds, ain't it? What we need are to be using softer compounds and have higher tire deg. You know, one thing I would say is Karun, and I'm teeing up here, Reed. A lot of people are talking about Karun Chandhok talking about using all compounds in a race. I think that is, as you would say, Vale, an arbitrary rule to use compounds to drive strategy. You didn't like it in quali, I don't like it in the race. I would say keep the two compound rule as it is. Just make sure that the tires actually degrade a little bit and people have to be smart with what they do in the race. And as I said, to end my tire note, make the choice in quali important. So I would actually start the tire strategy in quali. But Reed, I know you like all three, right?
I mean, Karun mentioned it, and I've heard it mentioned several times in the paddock. It's definitely a conversation that's happening about basically mandatory two-stop races. You got to use all three compounds. And I think that addresses some of Rob's, concerns that there won't be tire management anymore. Like, you will basically run every compound as hard as you can, as fast as you can, because you know that you're going to have to stop twice. You know, you're gonna use the life out of those tires a lot faster, and like the amount that goes into strategy goes up exponentially, right? When it can be a one stop with two compounds, and every race now is a two stop minimum. That's gonna throw the strategists
I'm gonna sign and get aboard and buy a ticket for the Rob Reed hype train, actually, because thinking about it, my problem with my thing about make the tires go off is what we'll actually do is we'll go back to, what was it, mid-2000s, where we got too many tire management races where nobody was pushing hard because they were trying to extend the life of the tires to the utmost degree. You're right. If you force everybody to have an extra pit stop, or you find a way of doing that so that people have to drive the hell off the tires, they'd never go into tire management mode because they don't need to, which is the most boring aspect of a race where no one's pushing because I've got to conserve my tires. It's just kills the drama. We often talk on the podcast about mid-race lulls where everybody's just in tire management mode and it's just pointless.
I mean, I get your points. Well, first of all, by the way, just to play the defense counsel here, you first said make the tires go off faster, and now you're saying just use the hell out of them. So which is it? You know, and
I have the floor.
And so what I would say is, in my mind, just keep it as it is in terms of the rules during the race. Put some of the jeopardy into qualifying, but make the tires softer. I think there's a talent. Here's the last thing I'll say. I think there's a talent in being able to manage your tires. And I'd argue Checo has made his name being able to manage the hell out of his tires through a race. And so
managing tires. Oh, why don't we just go and watch snail racing?
Well, what are you looking for? I mean, at the end of the day, people who can get the most out of their car without
full
braking.
Gas all the time. Like, every driver should be pinned the entire race. Like, they shouldn't be like, oh, I gotta manage my tires. I gotta do this. They should be absolutely going for it.
I think you can find that edge of the most speed you can get without burning the hell out of your tires. I mean,
yeah, Alonso like watching TV and giving his like teammate, you know, notes.
But
you know,
he was
like
watching Lewis's rear tires as well. Alonso is a genius.
Alonso was just cruising.
He was checking out stuff on Amazon as well on his app.
That shouldn't happen. That should not happen.
Good point. So anything you guys would change in the race itself other than tires? I have a couple that I would add.
No pitting under safety car.
Interesting. No pitting under safety car.
It used to be a rule.
So VSC as well?
No, VSC, I think. Yeah, I don't think VSC is necessary. But like, yeah, when safety car comes out and you get a free pit stop, some people benefit, some people don't. It's just like it's a very arbitrary advantage that certain drivers and teams get awarded based on where it happens, when it happens. I think they used to do the rule was like the pit lane was closed initially until the pack is bunched up, and then the pit lane opens when you're not actually getting an advantage.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. I think you could pit, but it was, like you say, until the pack had bunched and you didn't get that free pit stop. Because if you do want to maintain some strategy, you know, safety car is great for jumbling the race back up again, purely because of the fact that it concertinas everybody back together and we're going to get a restart. So I like that aspect of safety car, that we get that You know, I can't remember who we were talking to before that didn't like the fact that if I built up a 30-second lead, then a safety car comes out, we should reinstate all the leads prior to the safety car. Nah, I quite like the whole kind of it all bunches back up again. It's part of the jeopardy of the sport. But the free pit stops, I agree. The only way that I think you run into a problem with that, and maybe the FIA would have to police it to decide what deemed dangerous, is that if the safety car comes out, and I then go and get a puncture by driving over some nicked debris, and I've got my tire flapping around everywhere, but the pit lane's not open. Have I got to like carry on trundling around in a dangerous car, or should I be allowed to pit if it's obviously a safety concern? I mean, that's the only thing.
I mean, it used to be a rule, so I'm sure they had that in place, you know, some kind of exceptions or damage and stuff.
I think that's great in terms of minimizing the fluctuation of when we'll get lucky or unlucky. I have four little ones here because I actually think the race itself is pretty great as it is. So one, I just want people to be okay finishing under a safety car. Those are the rules. If you get near the end of the race and there's damage, everyone freaks out. They don't want to finish under a safety car. We saw this in Australia. Just finish under the safety car like we did in Italy a couple years ago. To me, that's the way the cookie crumbles sometimes. Two, I'd like to have fastest laps count a point for anyone regardless of where you are. If you're outside the points, this is a little crazy, you could still get the fastest lap. I'd like to see cars in the back maybe pit for some soft tires and go for it the last couple laps. That would make it incredibly entertaining at the end if Red Bull's riding off into the sunset. Maybe a little dangerous. I don't know. These are just ideas.
Before number three, hold the press. For the first time in this entire segment, I am all aboard the Brian train because I think when the front is kind of locked and loaded and there's some people that are lapped towards the back and, you know, let's say De Vries is trundling around in his Williams and he's got nothing left to play for other than maybe data for the team to analyze and help fine-tune performance for the next race and all that kind of stuff. If he could go and throw a set of softs on, just go for it. And if by some massive stroke of luck he nails a lap together and gets a crucial point on the board for both himself and Williams, I think that suddenly makes the back of the pack so much more interesting.
He races for AlphaTauri now. You're thinking of Monza last, but that's okay.
Yeah, whatever. It's, you know... Whatever, Trevor.
I agree. So I'm happy you agree. Reed, you're okay with this potentially?
Yeah, I'm on board.
All right. So here are my other two. These are a little crazy, and I'm going to let you guys beat them up, but I'll do them fast because these are a little out there. One, I'd like to have drivers be able to talk to their teammates during the rally, not just the pit wall. Teammates. No one else, but teammates, because I think the in-car Aston Martin radio right now would be chef's kiss. And then the last thing is I would be interested, and we talked about this on a pod previously with Molly, what if we had a push to use DRS kind of approach? And so it's not push to pass, it's just DRS straights, but you can only use a certain amount of them. And I think it would be kind of interesting from a strategy perspective. Again, this is a little out there. I'm not sure on this one. This is kind of just bouncing around. But if you had won a lap, 57 laps of the race, you have 57 times, even if there are two zones, it means someone else can use it on you in a zone when you're not using it. So, and you don't have to be within a second of anybody. You just want DRS, boom, you could hit. Just an idea. It's rough, but you get where I'm going.
No, it's not. It's not. I had a huge rant on an episode recently where I said, just get rid of DRS out of F1 altogether. It's just, it got introduced in an era to try to help better racing in an era where there was so much dirty air, you couldn't get into people's slipstream to try and overtake. So we just had processional race after processional race, and it did a job. It came in, it helped overtaking. The new cars, it's just too overpowered. So for me, I either want to see it gone, and we go back to drivers having to earn their right to pass through skill and obviously their car as well. Or, like you said, let's bring strategy into it. Rather than two arbitrary lines or three arbitrary lines on the floor and a 1 second thing that might get you to overtake someone, let them use it a certain number of times. Like when we've seen Red Bull absolutely powering it, and this isn't, I'm not having to go at Red Bull. They've done a phenomenal job to make a better DRS system than anybody else and should be applauded by it. But a couple of times we've seen, if I'm as a driver in front who's trying to defend and keep the lead of a Grand Prix, if I could activate DRS when he's coming after me, I could try and get away from him using DRS. I think that adds an extra dimension to DRS where it can use strategically rather than so far. I can't remember the stats. I'd have to look it up. But the percentage overtakes this season that are solely DRS enabled is insane. It's absolutely insane. It's like drivers aren't even bothering trying to look for the send it up the inside at the crazy overtaking spot. Just wait till I'm in the DRS zone. I'll just breeze past. So I'm not a DRS fan at all. Mr. Reed?
Well, I don't, you know, the intent of DRS was certainly not to give one team an advantage over another team. So like that needs to be rectified because Red Bull's DRS is so much more powerful than everybody else's on top of having the car that's most powerful. Right. So it's just like, it just, it sways the advantage even more in Red Bull's favor. So you know, we got to figure out some way to fix that if we don't completely do away with DRS, which I would agree with Rob at this point. It would either be worth getting rid of it completely because the cars just don't need it anymore, or, you know, Brian, I like your idea of kind of like randomizing it and almost making it like a Mario Kart type thing. But like you hit the DRS and maybe it opens or maybe it doesn't. It's just everybody's, it's like randomized, you know,
like Max is from a few years ago. I've hit it 50 times, mate. Is it open?
So they're hitting it every single time they hit the DRS. Like the drivers are just hitting it and sometimes it opens, sometimes it doesn't.
Oh, it's... man.
I think that's a little bit of a stretch, that one, but I like your style. I like the out there thinking. Just quickly to put a bow around this one about the flag, you were talking about the VSCs and the safety cars. I'd also like to see some kind of standardization of response times to these things. Like, which race? It was a couple of races ago, wasn't it, where the... they put the VSC out, I think, for a while, and then it was always, is it, isn't it? And then it was red flagged, and people had, I think George got screwed by pitting while he thought it was going to be a cheap pit stop. Right. I'll take advantage of this, popped in, came out, then it gets red flagged. It's like, you must have known. Like, hold off on the safety car announcement or whatever you're going to do. We've seen it.
No, VSC, they need to make quicker red flag decisions. Like the Leclerc crash in qualifying, you know, if they had made the red flag decision just a few seconds faster, they could have restarted the session, but they waited too long and it counted down and then they had to stop the session. So like they got to get better at, and they got to get better at communicating like, okay, you know, safety car, possible red flag coming. Like they got to be able to communicate that pretty quickly. So teams can make decisions on that information.
Because if we want strategy, and I do like strategy. So while I sometimes get a little bored of Brian's tire speeches, I do like strategy. But yeah, how can the teams plan for it if there's this kind of what feels like sometimes a little Wild West approach to it's a safety car. And then like three laps later, actually, it's a red flag. It's like, come on, you've got enough cameras, enough decision makers that know these things inside out that must be able to say, I like that actually, Rob. We're going to call a safety car, but there's a high chance this is being up to a red flag. All the teams are going to then go, well, we've now got information that we're armed with. We could still gamble and maybe it won't go red. But yeah, I like that.
So then shall we move to the teams? Any last items on teams? I have two, but I'd like to go last because one of them's out there. So Rob and Rob, anything on teams or miscellaneous items we haven't covered you'd like to hit?
I got one miscellaneous item and I don't even know this is possible, but I honestly hadn't realized. I know people kept talking about how much bigger the cars have got. And I saw an infographic the other day that kind of showed everything from like the 1950s up to now. And they are driving buses around the circuit now. I mean, in comparison to the sizes of bygone eras, I honestly thought that like Schumacher's car of the early 2000s wasn't really much different to the Ferrari you see Charles in now until you see the size comparison. I'd like to see the regs tighten up to reduce the size back down again, because I think some of the lack of overtaking we get is because you just can't get two cars around some of these corners. It's just and I don't think
the old cars were go-karts compared to today's cars.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah, absolutely. And I know you've got to make sure you balance in the safety element with it, but I can't believe they've grown to this size purely out of safety. Something doesn't feel that they need that much car now to be this safe, especially with the technology, with the kind of the structure of the cars these days can take so much more force. So yeah, that would be my thing. I'd like to see the regs maybe go after car size a little bit.
I think that's a good one. So here were the couple I had. I'd like there to be no in-season silly season. Like the NBA has free agency after the season, and it's a fun time in and of itself. Formula One's trying to find a way to make the calendar longer. Well, here's how you can do it. You don't have to add races. Move the driver market into after the season. You can do that. If free agency starts at midnight, a week after the last race, and then they can sign and do whatever. There are tampering rules in effect, like there are in the NBA. I just don't like it. It's so unsettling to have lame ducks driving around for half a season at a constructor. So for me, I'd like to see silly season moved to after the real season. And here's the one that is, Rob didn't like that one. You're really not gonna like this one. I'd like to see if we could add at least one, if not two teams to the grid. So two drivers a team, just like it is now. Let's go to 11 or 12 teams. You pay your dues, which they need to settle on in the Concord agreement. Don't do it and then come back and go, oh God, we're valuable now. We don't want Andretti because we want to raise the price. But allow teams to get in. And here's where it gets a little more, this again, this is a little out there. I'd like to have the last team each year removed and open that spot up for competition and have a trials 1 month before testing where the fastest one lap gets in the F1 season for the next year. I think this would be great. There's no relegation. The team is out. You got to have money. And there's so much money in the world, man. People will find the money. So I'd like to have one team a year relegated to no man's land and have a trials 1 month before season testing starts. One driver, one car, one lap. Here you go. You're in.
I know you shouldn't be drinking at this time of day. That's awful. I mean, you started off so strongly because I didn't get to say my last bit on the car size one is that once the cars are smaller, then you're not going to need as much space. Maybe we can go back. Because a lot of those pit lanes can support more than 10 teams. Back in the day, there were more than 10 garages. And I'd love to see 12 teams on there. I think if the cars are a bit smaller and we can get that back on there, that'd be fantastic. That relegation idea sucks and doesn't make any sense in the real world. You're gonna have entire teams that don't know if you're working for a team down the bottom. What you're gonna be? You're gonna be sacked at the end of the season because the team won't have any money coming in for next year.
Yeah, it's not like you can go to IndyCar or something like that. Yeah, there isn't another league to go to.
I didn't say I thought this idea all the way through. That's how we do it on the dirty side.
More teams.
You could decide that there would be only the top. If there's 12 teams, there's 24 cars. You could say that race day can only have 20 cars in it. So qualifying has got that extra jeopardy of four slowest cars can't race on Sunday. Or bottom two, you know, some kind of jeopardy there at least. I like that idea of there is some jeopardy for the worst teams maybe, but kicking them into touch at the end of the season. That feels a little harsh.
That one may be a little tough. Anyway.
But I think, I mean, across all of those items, we've learned a few things. We don't agree on anything. So we are not in any position to fix F1. We've come into the beginning of this segment saying that we're going to fix F1 as the dirty side here. And I think that if you actually gave it to the three of us to do, we would fix nothing because we'd spend all our time arguing.
If you used all my ideas, it'd be perfect, but that's okay.
But all we've talked about is like the sport aspect, which is the only thing that actually needs to be fixed. Like I'm like on the entertainment side, let them experiment. Let them try new things. Let every venue be different in terms of the entertainment value.
Couldn't agree more.
Yeah, like that's like that is what Liberty Media is for right now, for the most part.
100%. And it will be intriguing to just see what kind of a show Vegas puts on later in the year. And then even more intriguing to see the backlash to it in the comments afterwards. But I think we've done a good job there. I think maybe if you cherry pick some of the ideas and somebody else with more knowledge than us three kind of came on and picked the best bits out of those three, then yes, maybe here at the Dirty Side, we have just fixed.
Gold, F1. Jerry Gold.
Oh, man. What else are we doing? Miami Fantasy Recap? Is that what you wanted to do?
Yeah, briefly. So, again, sorry, everybody. It takes about 14 to 16 hours for the F1 fantasy game to calculate. So we were unable to give the Miami results. I finished a whopping 30th. Rob, I don't know where you finished because I couldn't use the tool to look you up because I tried and it broke. But number one was my brain choice with 392 points. There were definitely some tokens played. Nice job. Number two, SI Sport, F1. Well done, 381 points. Those are massive scores. Third, Neon Genesis F1 team. Fourth, Overpowered Racing, followed by a tie at fifth, Much Mistaken, and the Sigma Tauris. Seventh, Just a Racing Incident. Eighth, Vortices Racing A. And then we had a massive tie for ninth, so everyone gets a shout out because you're all in the top 10. Chicago Gooner, who I think is my friend Herb, just giving Fantasy F1 a try, and I don't think he's ever listened to a pod, so Herb, you should pay attention. Some teams, Juventus F1 team, RRM team F1, Cormac F1, and the well-named Blacks Verstappen, who made it into ninth, which then for the season puts us at, I somehow moved back into first. So I'm in first, Dirty Side Sap, followed by McLapham, Four or Shore, Busy Bee Racing has fallen to fourth, JP, I see you, Alan Giron at fifth, DLVs at sixth, Blacks Verstappen at seventh, Vincendis won an eighth, Neon Genesis F1 team and FPL Instinctive at 10th. So remember, the first half of the season has a t-shirt on the line. So everyone get your teams in and enjoy putting in something that resembles the template every week until things get worked out. But get your teams in. And Speaking of which, one thing that's coming up is we have Italy next week. We are
not speaking of which.
You found your team?
Yep. Yep. So,
you beat me, didn't
talking
you?
Of the, and this is
you wouldn't
just
have said anything
shows...
if you didn't beat me. So you're 29th
Correct.
Or better.
Correct. So you scored 331 points, right?
I did, yeah.
I completely forgot to change my team, which meant I just kept the template and also, unfortunately, kept De Vries in there because I'd swapped him in the previous race thinking he would be the best of the other drivers, right?
Yeah.
So this just goes to show how badly broken it is right now that me that gave no interest, forgot about it, just left the template in place. You scored 330.
Okay.
Oh, here we go. Excuses. Oh. You scored 331 points. I scored 332 points.
So were you 29th? Were you actually one
above? I don't even know. I don't even care. I just looked at there where I saw your score on the notes at 331. I went to the Miami thing. I went to my team and it said 332. Oh, I'm like, chef's kiss.
1 point. Albon couldn't have gotten me one more overtake. Come on, Albano.
So what did you... Because De Vries scored nothing. He scored zero. So
apparently Albon must have scored -1.
Yeah.
Happy days. I mean, just doing the math because I didn't change anything else.
Yeah, because everything else is the template, right? So really, essententially, yeah.
Triple
Miami
Red Bull,
was
triple
just
Aston
Albon
Martin
versus
then,
De Vries. Yeah.
How did De Vries? It's because he passed people? Oh,
I
God.
Don't know.
You get 2 points.
I don't know. They felt sorry
crap.
For him because he'd been so rubbish. They were like, oh, don't worry. We won't give you any negative points. And Rob needs to beat Brian. So there we go.
One. Well, job. Well, job well done.
Well,
there, jobs. Well, I can't even talk. I'm so discombobulated. Kerfuffled. I don't know what's going on here. Up is down. I'm doing the goggle games. Italy. We're going to Imola this coming week, which is exciting. I'm going to let you guys kind of talk us through a little bit of this, but I want to say one thing that we missed and we launched. This is the rumored Mercedes new car, right? Isn't it Imola? I'm fairly certain the rumor is they're bringing the other car with some kind of pods, half pods, quarter pods, side pods, big pods, tie
Red
pods.
Red Bull pods, basically. Isn't everybody going Red Bull pods now?
I think. I would assume if you go any other kind of pods, you're doing it wrong. Why wouldn't you copy the best? You always copy off the smartest kid in class, which is why everyone copied off me. So, Rob, tell us a little bit about Imola.
Sorry, I've lost all concentration thinking about everyone copying off you. We all know you're at the back of the line trying to see over everyone else's shoulder.
I mean, in all seriousness, did I sit outside a classroom one day with my friends memorizing por versus para for a Spanish idioms test? Yes, because we knew the order. We had the previous por, para, para, por, and I knew I got 100 on that one. So terrible. So anyway, back to you. Real world.
So we are going to go to Imola. 63 laps of a 3.08-mile circuit. Brian's going to correct me as soon as I say this because I can't say it the wrong way, but it's an anti-clockwise circuit, which is what, Brian?
I mean, we would call it counterclockwise, but I understand anti-clockwise. I love a lot of these British kind of things. It's brilliant.
It's a lot of high-speed corners. Drivers absolutely love this one. It's been around forever. It was built in 1950. Didn't start racing until kind of 53. It took a while till they actually got on the circuit, which reminds me, we keep going on about how we want to dive into this whole other world of non-championship races back in the day that we can't understand. So we will look into that one day. But its first real F1 race was 1963, where a certain Jim Clark won it in a Lotus.
Lizzie's very excited for the Jim Clark reference.
Yeah, so it was a Formula One race, but a non-championship event. So, you know.
By the time we figure those out, we'll also have done the Adrian Newey, even the Veil's Tales, even though we've already done basically an Adrian Newey Veil's Tales in pieces.
We have. 1980 is when it kind of actually got its real, its teeth in a championship race. It's kind of, it was on the calendar for forever up until 2006. It's unfortunately the scene of the weekend back in 94 when we lost both Ratzenberger and Senna that race weekend. And it's difficult to get its stats all together in terms of outright winners because it's one of those funky ones where if you look it up on Wikipedia, you end up reading just the San Marino Grand Prix stats. But this is actually, Imola's actually run as the San Marino Grand Prix for a long period of time. And when it came back, it's now the Emilia-Romagna Grand Prix. So you kind of have to stick these two together. Not that it really matters because there was such a gap between 2006 and current that none of the current drivers have won back then and none of the drivers that won back then are still around now. So we've got... Michael Schumacher has had the most wins ever with 7. Williams and Ferrari are joint constructors with 8. If we look at it just through the Emilia Romagna, then we get Max with 2 and Lewis with 1. Last year we had a quali that we saw Max, Charles, Lando, Lando was up there in the McLaren, and K-Mag take the front two rows. So Max, Charles, Lando, and K-Mag on the front two rows. That's insane. I don't remember the Albon brake fire when I read the notes, but I kind of do that we had red flags in quali that kind of jumbled it all up.
I think it was raining, and we were surprised that Albon was able to have his brakes catch fire in the rain, if I remember
right. That's right. Yes, I do remember we were kind of teasing about that. It's like, how do you get brake fires in the rain?
Only the Williams catch fire in the rain. It's like the river in Cleveland.
And we did. It was a rainy because we had a rainy start to the race, and then it dried up throughout. Red Bull took it as a 1-2 with Lando third, George fourth, and Bottas fifth. While I think we might see the top two repeated, I doubt those other three are going to make up the rest of the positions.
Well, if I remember right, so Valtteri's got a pretty interesting 2 years here, right? I could be getting this wrong. Last year, his fifth was the highest finish of an Alfa Romeo or an Alpine, which I think broke the tie and gave Alfa Romeo the higher constructor standing because of that fifth. Pretty sure that's right. And then going back 2 years, and Valtteri told us this on this here pokey little pod, he joked about the time when he crashed there. It wasn't as bad because you kind of had forward momentum. You didn't stop as abruptly. But then the biggest hit was when another driver came over and tapped him on the helmet. And that was when he and George came together, if you remember that incident. So I thought that was funny when he brought light to George coming over and wrapping his helmet. But yeah, I mean, I'm excited for this race. I always find Imola a fun race weekend. Hopefully the weather is good and doesn't play a factor in a negative way. But I agree with you. I don't think we'll see Lando up there, especially in the McLaren that it is this year. I'd be surprised if Lando finishes in the top 12.
Now, that crash with George and Valtteri is how I'll always think about Imola. Like, because it was like there was so much drama going on about, you know, George was kind of, you know, flagged for getting Valtteri's seat. And it was just kind of crazy that, like, he was in a Williams on merit catching Valtteri. And then there was like the drama about, like, did Valtteri squeeze him too hard because of that? You know, would he have done that if it was another driver? You know, and then that was a fantastic crash at like 190 plus miles an hour. That was a massive crash for both of them. So, like, yeah, that I'm sure those videos are all over YouTube, but that's just the biggest memory I have of Imola.
Yeah, and although we were dissing on McLaren there, if we go right back to the start of this and we're talking about how they think they've nailed the issue, and they feel that on circuits where they can be either heavy braking or heavy accelerating, so maximizing the grip, they're fast. And Imola's pretty much, like, I don't know what the percentages of full throttle around this place, but there's I don't know that they're going to have too many of those slow areas the medium slow areas that they're suffering with. So who knows? Maybe this is a track where McLaren can put in a better performance. I'm not seeing a podium for Lando, don't get me wrong, but I'm not sure they're going to suck as badly as they have for the last two races. Might be when we actually see a little bit of McLaren pace.
Well, I mean, I would love that. If what you're saying is true, it'd be fantastic, but I'm considering Imola to be Suckfest 2023 for McLaren again. I'm sorry, the car is so bad. And I love Lando.
Yeah, I mean, they had good pace at the end of which
race
was it?
They
found
pieces
pace
of a lot of races. Like, randomly had good pace. Even the first race when Lando had no air, hydraulic pressure and made six pit stops. You remember this? He was a lap down, but hanging on to everybody.
Yeah. And then he suddenly started setting fastest laps. The car's got pace. So again, that's what I'm saying, that if Imola doesn't hit any of all of their weaknesses, they might fare a little bit better. And better might just mean points.
Well, I'm hoping the Mercedes upgrade than the Tide Pods. The Tide Pods comes through and they can actually bring something to Aston Martin.
Exactly.
Maybe even beyond. So we'll see.
They ain't catching the Red Bulls.
See Lewis and Alonso going at it. That would be great. Yeah.
We can get a little bit more of the old fashioned radio like this.
What an idiot.
So we can kiss.
So go on then. We kind of we did the predictions with James ahead of the Miami. So let's do it here. Let's kind of make this a regular thing then.
We're
going to do it. And we forgot to mention it because we'd recorded James earlier and then we put our Miami review afterwards. We forgot we'd made those predictions. So we didn't kind of bust each other's chops to the fact that me and you were both wrong and James got it absolutely nailed Bob on. So I'll start with our guest, Mr. Reed. The podium in Imola will be...
You know, it's going to be pretty much what it was in Miami. It's going to be Verstappen, Perez, and Alonso.
Okay, so you're going for the template.
Yeah, pretty much the template.
It's a safe bet, Brian.
Okay, I'm gonna break the template because I'm trying again to force some differentiation through the universe or the multiverse, as it may be. And here we go. I've got Max, Checo. And then my third driver is not Alonso. It is...
George!
So basically, you're breaking the template. You're doing what we all do in the fantasy template, where you're keeping the main template and just changing that one driver.
Yeah, and?
So we've got two that have basically followed the template, so I might as well just be stupid because it's stupid, and therefore I'm going to be wrong, and if somehow I'm right, then I look like a genius. I'm going to see that we haven't had any DNFs or problems for either of the Red Bulls yet. We've had no carnage, no crashes, no mechanical failures in any of the races. So double DNF for Red Bull this week, and we get Fernando gets the win.
Debris podium?
No, don't be serious. Sergeant, of course. Logan, no. Yes. We get Fernando, we get George, we get Charles. There you go. Completely wrong podium prediction.
Well, yeah. So on that, let's remind everybody, feel free to submit your F1 crap throughout the week, hashtag F1 crap, or send it to us on Twitter. But also, in all seriousness, we'd love to have additional race reviews. So send us at dirtysideofthetrack@gmail.com. Just a quick audio file, just an audio recording on your phone with your name, first name, please. We don't need your whole name. First name, location, and then a 10-word race review. And we play two or three every week. So submit those to us, and we'll do that when we recap Imola. I think this was a brilliant episode. Twice the power of Rob finally brought it equal to me, if that's possible. No, I'm just kidding. That was a joke. I don't think that way. Having a real Rob here was actually better is what it was. So Mr. Reed... you were tremendous. Thanks for joining us, as always.
Thanks, guys. So good to be here.
Oh, just awesome. And yeah. Robbie Vale, are you as excited about Imola as I am?
I am. I really like this track. And again, I want to say this without sounding an F1 snob, and I know there's almost it just sounds it anyway. Is this, I like going back to a classic, real custom racetrack rather than street tracks have got their place.
I'm with you.
I want to go to Imola and look forward to some proper racing.
Yeah, you heard my rant about these fake car park tracks, and I know it's Miami in the U.S., but I love these old tracks. I love COTA. I love purpose-built tracks. It's a thing for me. So on that, everybody have a wonderful week ahead. We look forward to talking to you in a week's time. Be well.